My name is Karina Harney, Playboy's Playmate of the Year, 1992.
And I'm Echo Johnson, Miss January, 1993. Welcome to the Bunny Chronicles. Let's go.
Hi, my name is Karina Harney, Playboy's Playmate of the Year, 1992.
And I'm Echo Johnson, Miss January, 1993. Welcome to the Bunny Chronicles. Let's go.
Hey guys, welcome back to the show. We're coming to you today from Roddenberry Studios. And we are going to do some reaction vids and conversation regarding a podcast called Power, the Hugh Hefner Story. It, again, is a very salacious, false narrative of the history of Playboy. And so we're going to go through and discuss the shows and actually tell you the truth. So the first one that we're going to start with is The Limits of Liberation. But before we do that, John, introduce yourself. And
sure. So I'm John Champion. I'm currently a producer and host with Roddenberry. So podcast.roddenberry.com. And I worked for Playboy in the 90s up through 1995. And, you know, for a good chunk of the time that I was there, worked in PR and was kind of the trivia nerd of the group.
You know? Love it. Yay. Yeah. He's teaching me stuff.
But, you know, I took a lot of joy in just being able to read and do my research and go through whatever it was, whatever, if it was something that was published or even just enter office memos, learning who these personalities were and what drove them from Hef on down.
Right.
You know, I will say I did not meet him. And some of the stuff that we're getting into today was before my time, before your time there. But also pretty well documented.
Yes, it's history.
Yeah. So it's not like we're sharing anything that is new or groundbreaking here, but it is important to add a little perspective, I would say.
Yeah. So I'm going to read the show note of what this this particular episode is about, and then we're going to get into the conversation, and John's going to speak about it a little bit more because he does have a better understanding about it. So, The Limits of Liberation. Hugh Hefner's world is knocked off its axis when he's targeted by President Nixon's new war on drugs. Bobby Arnstein, is it Arnstein or Arnstein?
Arnstein.
The Playboy founder's confidant and close ally is caught up in the middle. Arnstein's friend Keith Stroop tells the story of her life and death.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Let's get into it.
So, and first of all, you know, I don't want to, it's impossible to take away from somebody's personal experience. So Keith Stroop's story is, you know, his story, and that is all well and good.
Disclaimer.
I mean, what I hope to do is that you and I can talk through some of the historical context
of
what was going on there. Mm-hmm. And there's honestly a few aspects to this that I think are important. First of all, let's put ourselves there in time. If you were to sum up each of these decades, you know, particularly in Playboy's history, mm-hmm. you know, in the 50s, Playboy is finding its feet, and it's this reaction to the very conservative kind of post-war America. Mm-hmm. The 60s, things get crazy because mm-hmm. it is the sexual revolution. There is a youth counterculture revolution. There is a national conversation about drugs and sex.
Right.
And the entire pop culture is shifting, and Playboy is shifting along with that.
Right.
The 70s then come along, and in ways, the sexual revolution continues and expands. In other ways, there is a pushback. Mm-hmm. That rubber band needs to snap back into place. Mm-hmm. And Nixon, probably better than anybody, is, I mean, what a great avatar for exactly that.
Exactly.
You know? It is no longer the Camelot era of the early 60s or LBJ's sort of, you know, progressive liberal social plans.
Correct.
You know? So we're in a very different time here, and these concerns about drugs and sex and pornography get wrapped up into this bigger cultural conversation about, you know, kind of what we went through in the 80s and continue to go through now is, you know, how does this reflect on American values and American ideals? And of course, Playboy being, you know, the biggest part of that cultural conversation is a huge target, and Hef being the personification of that becomes a target as well.
Exactly.
You know, and the Nixon administration is doing two things that I think are really important, and one that's not mentioned in the show notes here, but it is really important to understand. In 1970, the Nixon administration, under the Nixon administration, you have the release, and I want to get the phrasing exactly right here, the report of the Commission on Obscenity and Pornography.
That's right. I've read about that.
Published in 1970. Not to be outdone by the 1986 Ed Meese Commission report on pornography under the Reagan administration.
Right.
But I feel like these are two almost like bookended places in Playboy's history that really affected the magazine and affected that cultural conversation because really important to understand that 1970 report essentially said, look, we've investigated, we've looked through what is considered to be pornography, including Playboy. And look, you know, that is a definition of a word that is very difficult to grapple
with. Yeah, I mean, anyway, I think everybody has their own perception of what is considered pornography.
So that's just another conversation for another day. But regardless, this commission did that. And they said, look, we clearly would come down on the side of recommending that children be restricted from these materials. These are adult materials, but we don't see any scientific or socially relevant reason to prevent adults from buying and consuming pornography.
Fair.
Okay. So what do you think happened then? The Senate rejects it outright. It is like
vetoed.
Yeah, they're like, no, we do not accept the findings of you experts in your field.
Of course.
Because we want to grandstand. We want to show America what we stand for.
Right.
Essentially, a similar thing happened in 86 where, you know, the recommendations were like, look, you know, there are some things we need to be concerned about, but in general, no, just keep this material away from children. That's essentially it.
Yeah.
But then, you know, the media's reporting on that was something entirely different.
Of course.
You know, we reject this. It's like, oh, no, like chill. Right. At the same time, you also have this, I guess, the war on drugs 1.0.
1.0, you know? The beginning.
Yeah. And my favorite sort of vision of that is, you know, the famous meeting of Elvis in the Nixon White House.
Oh, yes, that was the best.
Yeah.
Yes.
And I used to, oh, God, this is so weird. I can't believe I'm connecting my worlds here. Purely out of irony, I had a picture of Elvis meeting Nixon on my desk at Playboy.
I love that you have that picture.
It was so weird.
Such a bizarre encounter.
Yeah. I had gone to Graceland. I took a road trip with some friends one year, and I was just like, this is just too weird that they sell this in the gift shop, so I need it.
Absolutely.
You know? Yeah. But that was the thing. It was like, here is this you know, presumably counterculture figure like Elvis deciding in the late 60s, early 70s, well, his drugs are okay, but he doesn't, but he doesn't trust those hippies with their marijuana.
Yeah, it was the hippie problem.
It's their problem. So then he goes to Nixon and says, like, please make me a deputy.
He got deputized.
Wild. Bananas.
Yeah.
It's crazy. So I say all of that to like set the cultural context of what's going on, you know? Because then what happens is here's Playboy with, as I said before in our previous conversation, depending on when this gets released, that it's one of the first national magazines with this huge platform to come out and advocate for the repeal of marijuana laws. The Playboy Foundation, or at the time, whether it was called the Playboy Foundation or whatever, gave money to NORML, the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws.
Yeah, I actually do remember an acronym. I remember that NORML.
Yeah,
so that's
NORML.
What that stood for?
Yeah.
Okay.
because it fell very much in line with Playboy's overall position of advocating for personal freedoms.
Interesting.
And yes, the world tends to kind of get stuck and fixate on the sexual aspect of that.
Right.
But you also have to understand that this is a sincere part of the overall editorial package.
Exactly.
Civil rights, personal rights, exactly. Sexual rights, etc. Drug rights became mm-hmm. a part of that as mm-hmm. well. Mm-hmm. So all the eyeballs go on to Hef.
Of course.
Because they go on to Playboy, because Playboy is part of this advocacy for something that, well, the establishment just sees it won't do.
You know? Exactly. And then general public, you know, jumps on that bandwagon right away. And this is how it's always been in the 60 years that, you know, have ran that company, is right away they're going to attach him to that. They're going to say that he is this type of person. Yeah. You know, he's pro-drug, da da da. And again, Hefner was so anti drugs. You were not allowed to have drugs in the mansion. And mark my word, if he caught even one of his best friends, and there were people that were caught doing drugs, they were removed from the property by security, and they were banned on the list for 2 to 3 years. And that is truth.
Yeah. See, isn't that so interesting that as all this salacious stuff comes out, like on the one hand, you look at it and go, okay, in the 60s and 70s, there was a lot of experimentation with drugs.
Yeah.
Yes, no question about
it.
And Hef was open about taking amphetamines, which were prescribed because he wanted to work all night.
Right.
I get it. I understand. But then he was
he smoked pot. And I know that. Yeah, and then who cares? Like pot, everybody should smoke weed, in my opinion.
but then, you know, you get to this point later where, you've got parties at the mansion and harder drugs are becoming
and
more widely available.
And
this is a place, you know, the mansion under his rule that says, no, absolutely not, you know. So flashback to the late 60s when Bobby Arnstein started and into the 70s when she was so close to Hef. And again, preface all of this, I did not know her. She was gone well before my time there.
It again is just everything it's been documented in documentaries. Hef has spoken about it, and you're knowledgeable about it.
She was an executive assistant. She worked at the mansion.
She was very dear to Hef.
And extraordinarily close.
Mm-hmm. It devastated him. What happened?
I would say that if anybody has not watched the, you know, for better or for worse, there are production things you might take issue with. But as far as telling the complete story, the Amazon series, American Playboy, dedicates almost an entire episode to this story. And what's nice about it is they have the actual film footage from the time. I believe it was 1974 or 5 when she committed suicide. Hef reading his statement after she had died.
Correct.
And the thing that is so important to understand, first of all, his emotions, I believe, are very honest and very raw.
What you see is what you get.
And what is so important to understand about what happened is that she was targeted because of her association with him.
Exactly.
And over again, the FBI and any of the enforcement and investigators—they all going after her in order to get to him, because they thought, "Oh, look, if we pin something on her, that we can pin on Hef, then we pin it on the magazine, and we bring this empire of pornography crumbling down. Look what we've done to save the moral future of the country." It's all nonsense.
And guess what? They didn't find anything.
Exactly.
The FBI, the CIA, and again, people, it's all documented. And that is why, you know, Karina and I keep saying, like, we beg you and we plead with you, especially to a younger generation, do your research. Yeah. Everything is out there. Everything has been documented about Hugh Hefner's life, even before Playboy. So it's all out there. There are facts out there.
I can't remember. I asked you, and I can't remember if you had it or not. Toshin put out this 4, this huge set of books.
I don't have it. You showed me. But instead, I went on his website, and I was blown away. So instead, I ended up buying the Big Breast book. And it's phenomenal.
Well, I bet.
And the first woman, because they do the 50s, 60s, and 70s, the first woman in the 70s was a play. playmate, and she shot her her pictorial in Hef's office, and it was a big, you know, homage to Hugh Hefner, obviously.
Because, that's funny.
Yeah.
That's
so, cool. But anyway.
Well, yeah, in this set of books, Hef had this remarkable ability from a very young age to document his life, as he said. And whether it was cartoons or he published the neighborhood newsletter when he was like 8 years old.
Exactly.
Or something.
Exactly.
Kept all of it. Mm-hmm. And what's amazing is that you go back and you read all this stuff that is from his very young childhood up until his, you know, late high school years, went to the army right afterward. And you can very plainly connect the dots. Mm-hmm. What were his influences? Mm-hmm. What were his passions? Mm-hmm. What were the things that he cared about deeply, you know? And you can see how Playboy sprang from that very clearly. Then you fast forward to the 70s and all of this very turbulent period, right? Everything that he kept about Bobby, the notes that he wrote that he gave at that press conference, condemning, absolutely blasting the FBI and the drug enforcement agents who investigated this. Because to make the long story short, the epilogue to all of this is that Bobby took her own life rather than play along in this horrendous, unfounded game to try to pin something on
Hugh Hefner,
who is not involved.
Exactly.
You know, and I so, from everything that I've seen and read, I so admire her wit and her her kind of sass. You know, she apparently, in the suicide note, she wrote on the envelope something along the lines of, "Just another boring suicide letter." I mean, which gallows,
yeah. I mean, that speaks volumes to her character and who she was.
Gallows humor.
Yeah.
But, but you know.
But nonetheless, that's true. She did that.
Yeah, she did. And, and it just seems like, you know, it's such an interesting time that was 1974 or five, I think, 74. Hef was already splitting his time. He'd already bought the mansion in L.A., splitting his time with Chicago. But you can tell, you can absolutely tell that this was a watershed moment where it felt like Chicago was no longer home.
Yeah.
And it felt like all the negative attention, the negative energy focused on Playboy in Chicago then and there is really what drove him to L.A. And to me, of course, you can't take away from all the great stuff that happened at the mansion in L.A., too, and his life in L.A. and teaching at UCLA and doing all these other things. But it also feels like that change, that life change, also just sort of changed the course,
the trajectory
of everything.
Yeah,
because it was all that stuff in the late 60s, like hosting these events at the mansion in Chicago for...
And God forbid they were biracial.
Well, I was to say, for a Rainbow Coalition and Operation Push and all of these things that really focused there.
Right.
It changed. It all changed. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying it was all bad that it changed, but certainly there was this negative emotional and negative legal attention that was all centered on that.
And with that said, it was at that point when Hef did make the final move to Los Angeles. I believe Bill Farley shared this with me. I can't recall. But Hef was on the top 10 list of people to be assassinated.
Wow.
And he obviously he was fearful. I mean, with the he's got the FBI breathing down his neck. He's got CIA. He's got this outrage from everybody.
Yeah.
And so that occurred, and that is also a big reason why when he bought the mansion and that compound, which is 7 acres in Los Angeles, he stayed there. He did not leave premises. For that reason, for safety reasons.
Yeah.
And that was all this backlash of, again, it was unfortunately a false narrative that was skewed, and they, you know, tried to come after him.
Yeah.
And it had nothing to do with him.
There is something, as extraordinary a life as he had, there is something kind of tragic about that change, because there was the Hef before that.
Right.
I did not know him. This is just sort of like he's.
But this is what we know from watching documentaries.
And watching and reading, you know. But there was the Hef before that, who was very much a part of Chicago's landscape and very influential in that city. And I think Playboy could have and only could have come from Chicago of that time. And you see, that's the guy who, you know, there's a great mini documentary about him made in the late 50s, early 60s. It's one of the bonus features on the Playboy After Dark DVDs. And here he is just driving around town in his Mercedes just a working executive from a magazine with this fabulous mansion.
Right.
But then you fast forward, and then he's a guy who, like you said, has a target on his back. Mm-hmm. So he's at the mansion and won't leave. Mm-hmm. The good part is, great, you get to shape the world around you and make it what you want it.
Right.
But the bad part is, well, then he doesn't get to be out there and do the things that other people would do.
Yeah,
you know, exactly. There's a big trade-off to that kind of fame.
Exactly.
And that kind of infamy.
Exactly. Yeah. And, you know, it was interesting when, you know, him and Kimberly divorced amicably and, you know, Hef came out to the world.
Yeah.
And he has said this. He was absolutely blown away by the way that people received him, because there was this whole new generation of people that knew of him, that knew about, and also I think just the world as a whole, like, blew his mind. I mean, because he never left the mansion,
right?
You know,
right.
So yeah, interesting.
Yeah, I would really encourage people to go take a look. I think the story of the relationship between Hef and Bobby Arnstein is fascinating anyway, because they really seemed like two people who got each other.
Absolutely.
And could also kind of rankle each other a bit and call each other out.
Yep.
I mean, she seemed to be this kind of tough lady who could do that.
He respected her immensely, and he loved her and he adored her. And he had very fundamental relationships, working relationships like that with many women in the world of Playboy.
Oh, that was one of my favorite things about working there, is that I primarily worked with women in every department that I was in. And that just kind of, it was so obvious and so right.
Exactly.
That the people who I worked with and really looked up to, mostly women there.
Yeah. Right, right. And do you think that those women would have stayed there 30, 40, 50 years if they were being sexually assaulted or harassed by Hugh Hefner?
See,
no.
Yeah, that's the thing, it's so weird.
It's laughable. Yeah, it's just like, what are they talking about?
It's so strange right now where we are in this time to hear these certain stories phrased in certain ways.
Right.
Because then all you have to do is talk to the dozens and dozens, if not hundreds of people who can say, like, no, I was there.
Exactly.
And this didn't happen the way you're describing it. Mm-hmm. That's what's so strange to me. Mm-hmm. I think it's a shame that this is happening, obviously, after Hef has passed away.
That, to me, is the biggest. It's just wrong.
Yeah, yeah.
And I would not be surprised if there's some sort of lawsuit that comes from this, because it's a complete, you know, defamation of his character.
Yeah, yeah.
And then it reflects onto Cooper and Marston and Kimberly Hefner, not to mention everybody else that was a part of Playboy that loved him. It reflects onto Playmates poorly. And that's a coveted title that we own and that we love and are honored to wear. And it's just being muddied.
Yeah. Yeah. There are other cultural figures whose names I shall not name.
Yeah. That's fine.
who, you know, as these negative stories come out and they get corroborated and corroborated and over again, oh, wow, there was a really terrible pattern there. It's a good thing that we're re-examining our past and re-examining those behaviors. This one kind of blows my mind because, again, they're just so...
It just doesn't fit, you know?
Well, with a life lived so publicly.
Exactly. How could he get away with doing something like that for 60 years? He couldn't because he didn't do it.
Yeah.
And the thing that infuriates me is that these women, these producers behind these series, including the Power Podcast and the A&E docuseries, they're attaching the Me Too movement to Hugh Hefner and putting and trying to claim him as a sexual predator.
Yeah.
The Me Too movement thing is a very real thing.
Sure. Absolutely.
And myself and every other playmate I've spoken to, it happened to every single one of us.
Yeah.
It did not happen to any of those girls that are in the docuseries.
Yeah.
And that right there, it's like, I don't understand how there could not be some pushback on that.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah. And that's, you know, what I want to see is people who were there, and many of them are coming out and saying what they saw, what they experienced.
Right. And thank God for this podcast, because now we have the opportunity to bring everybody on.
No, exactly. Exactly. And that's why I would say, and you know, you're friends with Lacey as well.
Yes.
That's why I would say to check out that, what would you call it? Drama series on Amazon.
I loved that one. Yeah, that one was great.
Lacey's in it quite a bit.
Yeah.
Dick Rosenzweig, trying to think of who else who had been there for so long.
There was a lot.
I think Arthur Kretschmer is. Yeah. He's in there. Cause I was shocked that the person they got to play him as a younger man, I was like, no. You have Arthur today talking. You can see what he looks like.
Right. Why don't you use him?
Why don't you cast somebody who looks totally the opposite of him? You
know? The dramatization, the production dramatization. Yeah. But yeah, that series, and I went and rewatched it again while we were filming the first season of The Bunny Chronicles. And I learned so much more by really sitting down and just taking bits and pieces out of it. Yeah. And then there's another one too. It's called, I think it's Hugh Hefner, Playboy Activist Rebel.
Yes.
That's a really great one too.
That is quite good. Yeah. And, you know, I guess more important than any of that is that, you know, we joked around the last time about this old meme about how I only read it for the articles.
Yeah.
And then there are people who clearly have not read it for the articles.
Right.
But I think what's more important than any and all of that is to actually take the magazine for what it is and for the statements that were in that magazine
exactly.
at the time. Because you can see the cultural change happen in the magazine.
Right.
You can see Playboy grappling from this editorial point of view with changes in the culture over decades and decades. I think that's more important than anything you could say about one particular person.
I agree.
Is just like, hey, look, here was a real attempt, a real honest, thoughtful, deep attempt to take on important cultural and social topics, force that into the public conversation. Mm-hmm. And I said it last time, I'll say it again, it breaks my heart that we don't have that now because our media is so fractured. But at the time, you know, I love seeing 60s, 70s, 80s and beyond. Here's a magazine that very thoughtfully takes on issues of sexuality and gender roles and gender identity
and racism and politics.
Exactly.
I mean, everything. It was endless.
If you had that brain trust from then,
right,
talking about what we're talking about now, whether it's Me Too or it's, you know, gender roles and the current kind of political landscape around that, I would love for that to be the case, but we don't have that.
We don't have it. And I just don't see that happening because the way the media landscape is, you know, I don't ever see it reverting back to like real, true, authentic journalism. And that's unfortunate specifically for these young generations because they're taking everything at face value. And it's like, no, like this is history. This is a historical figure. Every major university in this country has a class that they teach about Hugh Hefner, whether you're going into the business or publishing industry, you know?
All you need to do is literally, it doesn't cost that much. You can go sign up at iPlayboy, I think, and see the magazine, like actually go read the articles.
Yeah, exactly.
Because that's where the interesting stuff is happening.
Exactly. You know? Yeah. And I will mention this too, because you were speaking about, you know, not only Hef's archival skills, and that is just been a part of his entire life.
I wish I had that kind of time and energy.
So April 9th, there is a book that's being published. And April 9th is Hugh Hefner's birthday. And it's being published by Stuart N. Brotman. And it's called The First Amendment Lives On. And it's commemorating Hugh Hefner's free speech values and the impact that he had on our world. So that's a really, that's going to be a very fascinating read. And we're also going to interview him. So also people out there, go get the book. You can get it on Amazon right now. the First Amendment lives on.
That was something that really meant a lot to me when I was working at the magazine, is just sort of getting focused on First Amendment issues.
Yeah.
Because obviously that's going to be a big part of Playboy's history as well. And we were doing things, we were aligning with groups like Feminists for Free Expression, women from all walks of life.
He was so supportive of women.
Yeah. And we were doing like arranging events for Banned Books Week. I remember getting celebrities to read sections from banned books on the steps of the New York Public Library.
I love
That stuff was so exciting and wonderful and really spoke to what Playboy's values were and frankly should still be.
Right. Yeah. And I think, you know, that if these generations did take the time to do so, I think that their minds would be blown. And I think their consciousness would be elevated. And I think that they would learn a lot and really have a different perspective. And that's really, you know, what we're here to do.
Yeah. I wish that editorial voice still existed. There are important conversations to be had right now, particularly about Me Too, about gender politics, et cetera. There was sort of like a last gasp that I thought was really important several years ago when there was this, somebody had broken into iCloud accounts for some celebrities.
Oh, I remember
and
that.
And released some nude and compromising photos. Mm-hmm. And I got to hand it to whoever was an editor or a writer at Playboy at the time who published this great takedown of the whole thing, saying, look, you know, Jennifer Lawrence is not a thing for you to pass around.
Exactly.
And I thought, that's the kind of relevant voice to something that is happening.
That we need.
Has to do with sexual politics, has to do with personal freedoms, individual freedoms. And we don't get that now. We don't have an editorial voice at Playboy trying to contextualize what's happening now.
Yeah. Wow. Interesting stuff. Okay. I think that was show number 7. And again, I would suggest to our listeners to watch the Amazon Prime. It's called
American Playboy.
It's called American Playboy. Yeah. And there is a show in there that's dedicated to this whole topic that we're talking about. And I do know that, you know, Hef was absolutely devastated by that. And it's unfortunate that this show and the power is she's turning it into something that it wasn't. So, all right. Yeah. So we're going to wrap up this reaction and then we're going to go into another one. So stay tuned. Thanks, John.
Thank you.